Welcome to the Eat the Evidence podcast, a show for cake and cookie decorators and sugar artists of all kinds. I'm your host, Kimberly Chapman, and this is episode number 48 on December 5th, 2019. On this episode, Rosie Mazumder from Cake Masters Magazine joins me to talk about the magazine, the Cake Masters Magazine Awards, and our lovely community of creative people in general. So whether you're working on your latest magazine-worthy masterpiece, taking a breather before the mega Christmas rush begins, or already elbow-deep in holiday orders, let's get this show started to educate and inspire you on your sugar arts journey. Joining me now is the founder and editor of Cake Masters Magazine and the Cake Masters Magazine Awards, the one and only Rosie Mazumder. Yay!
Hi, how are you?
How are you doing?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm not asleep after the weekend we've just had anymore.
Yeah, it's been a really, really busy weekend, but it was super exciting, I think, for everyone.
Yes. I should say for the listeners, we are recording this on November 6th, even though it's going to air in several weeks. So we have just had Cake International and the award show.
Yes, it's been a really busy weekend. I think it's a busy weekend for everyone who comes down to Cake International. And then we have the Cake Masters Magazine Awards on the Saturday night, which is just very glitzy and glamorous. And it's just a fantastic evening.
It's the party to go to.
It is.
It's so much fun. I love it. I mean, I'm never going to win one, and I still want to come every time.
I think it's just that joined sort of sense of community, like seeing all the friends, all the people that you follow on social media, being nominated, then being a finalist, and then for that one night that they might become the winner. And I think sharing the joy in that, I think that's something that Everyone loves to be part of, I think, and it's definitely something that I love to be part of.
Yeah, I've screamed myself hoarse for some friends. this year I try to nominate people I think are less likely to be nominated, because I know it's not how many numbers other than a couple of the categories. So I try to nominate people I think maybe you, like particularly the British people, haven't heard of. And so this year I'd nominated Thomas Blake Hogan for Cookies and for Rising Star. And I told him, I said, look, I'm nominating you for these things. You're probably never going to hear back. So when he was a finalist, I screamed. I was like, oh my God, have you seen this? Like,
So I mean, we do get lots of nominations in, and I do like also having, you know, I wouldn't call them unknown, but maybe less well known on, say, social media or people who don't really do as much on social media. But if their work is to the same standard of someone who is constantly active on social media, then of course they have the same sort of shortlisting right. And you're right, it's only for the skills-based categories, you only need one nomination to put yourself forward. So compared to some, say, more popular cookie artists, Thomas Blake Hogan, for example, wouldn't have got as many nominations, but it, as I mentioned, it's not based on the number of nominations.
Exactly. And it's just so exciting when you see your friends up there. And I mean, sometimes there are two or three of my friends. I mean, People's Choice this year. Oh, my God. I'm like screaming for everybody. I'm like, I love you all.
Yeah, that was a new category this year. And it was quite exciting because that was purely based on the number of nominations. So we thought, let's just have one. Let's just have one for people's favorite artists. And we'll just base it on the number of nominations. And I think that was really well received.
Yes, I know Molly was really, really happy. So.
Yeah, she was crying. So I think she was really startled on stage. But she was just crying so much afterwards before her actual filmed interview. She was like really hard to, it was hard for her to really keep it together. And I thought, I didn't see this on stage when she won. It was almost like she was really like, didn't know what to say. And then when she came off, and it was all sort of like coming, like becoming real for her, and she was holding the award, and it meant so much to her. She was really happy. She was, it was really emotional for her when she was just sort of queuing up to get her final photo and for the winners' interviews in the Warwick Suite next to the main room. And I was just like, oh gosh, it means so much. And you know, she was really upset. She was happy, happy upset. I think it was just meant a lot. She was quite overwhelmed.
Yes. I mean, well, it must be overwhelming. So, I mean, they are the Cake Oscars.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you saw on the night, there's so many tears when people go up on stage, or just people don't know what to say. Jonathan Holst was one of them.
Yes.
Sophia Fox. They were just, you could just see that it meant so much to them. And then being cheered up, and when they were coming, even off the stage, the cheers that they were coming to, just, I guess it gives that person such a huge amount of validation and so much energy to kind of keep going or to try new things and in their art. So yeah, it's a really lovely evening, and it's just filled with like happiness and emotion. It's a lovely community to be a part of.
Yeah, and I think a lot of us, because we're perfectionists, many of us by nature, we undervalue our work.
Yeah, so I do think so. Yeah. And I see that a lot, where artists really continuously criticize themselves. Mm-hmm. And then I guess for an artist putting their work out there on social media, it's out there for everyone to see and critique it. So I do feel like maybe confidence sometimes with certain cake artists is not quite there. And sometimes it's hard for me to think that, gosh, these people are so humble. They don't actually think what they're doing is that good. They're constantly telling me that they could have improved this, they could have improved that, when actually you're looking at a piece of art. Mm-hmm. Callie Hopper is one of those people where I feel like what she produces is absolutely stunning.
Oh, my God, yeah.
When she incorporates her hand-painted work. Mm-hmm. And I do feel that when I talk to her about a piece, there's a little part of her thinks that, oh, I could have done that a bit better, right? Or mm-hmm. I could have done that a bit better. Or a part that's not 100%, but maybe 80% of the way there. And that, I think that's a sign of a true artist, where you're constantly trying to think that, oh, I could have done that a bit better, or I could have changed the way that looked, or the shading on that. But to us and to me, it's absolutely amazing. It's an absolutely amazing thing that they put out there.
I'm wondering, I mean, because I know this comes up every time when the nominations are coming out, and then you always post a very funny post about, like, drowning in the nomination.
Yes.
So how, assuming that you are not actually an army of clones,
yes.
How do you deal with that?
We have an amazing team at Cake Masters. I have some awesome girls that work for me, and freelancers as well. Cake Masters has always been quite a remote working type business. We worked initially from just our living room with computer set up with me and my husband. Everyone that worked for us was offline. And all we connected through was social media, WhatsApp and Skype. And that's how we connected, just with phone calls every now and again. It felt like people were in the room with me. We didn't actually have an office space or anything like that. So although we might only be like two people in the office or three and a half people in the office, we have such a huge network of people that are offline or remote, right from proofreading to cutting out images, graphic designers, to content generation and content themes and ideas. We are quite a big team when it comes to things like that. And I have a huge support when it comes to, say, the Cake Masters Magazine Awards, even when it's the video production or, you know, the collation of all the information and all the different menu choices for the night. That's a lot of fun for my girls. But we have a great support network. So it all comes together. It was stressful, but it all comes together on the night.
I'm just going to interject to say that was the best meal I've had at one of these types of events ever. And I used to be a .com journalist who had a lot of these types of meals. Mm. I'm fussy with food allergies and issues. And that was seriously, particularly the beef. Oh, my God, that was so good. Can we have that again?
It was really good. So whenever we do these events, we are always told by organizers, chicken is just safe. And I think we've had chicken for the last 5 years. And it's like chicken and a veg and a gravy. That's what it tends to be. But when we went to the tasting at the Hilton, where they literally give you five different starters, five different vegetarian starters, five different main meals, then five different desserts, we got to taste one of the beefs. And we just thought, oh, my gosh, we all love this. But it's not the safe option of chicken. And it literally was so soft, and it was coupled with the Dauphinois potatoes, which was equally as creamy and yummy. And oh, it was just yummy. And I think that was the most positive bit of feedback that we got on the night, that the food was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing.
I'm really happy that it went down well. And I think people really loved the vegetarian tart as well.
I had that because I'm not into salmon. So I'm not even generally, like, I'm okay with sweet potatoes and pumpkin, but that was delicious.
It was really good.
Yeah.
My husband had the salmon and I had the tart, and he was just like, I really want your tart. I really love it.
It was just so good. I mean, last year there was, at the other venue, there was the caramelized onion walnut tart. Let's just have a lot of tarts, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think it's like the safe bet to go for a vegetarian starter. And then we decided to actually have a choice of starter by having the salmon on, because we actually really enjoyed having the salmon. So normally you would just have one starter and one main and dietary options. So if you are allergic to something or you have an intolerance to something, that main meal of one starter and one main would be alternated. But this year they said that we could have a choice, so salmon or tart. So yeah, it was a bit of a break. And I think people liked the difference in having the salmon too. So yeah, the food was good.
Yeah, and the person beside me, my friend Jackie Curtis, who we've been doing this, we're part of this whole weird sausage group, I know, which is so super weird, but she, which started as an in-joke and now it's just even more ridiculous joke, and it's just, we're just going to build on it every year, but so she's gluten-free and, like, you know, seriously can't have any gluten, and she felt cared for. She was saying how happy she was at every step.
That's really nice. The Hilton are really good, and I know that Hannah, who works on my team, really made sure that for any dietaries that we reached out to that person specifically, and then confirmed with the venue exactly what that person would be eating, and then going back to that person just to reassure them.
I got an email from her. It's a
lovely night, and the last thing you want to worry about is your food, which is only one part of the night, and we just want to make sure, because the food is really prepared in a beautiful way and presented in a beautiful way, we want to make sure everyone, even people with dietary or intolerances, feel part of that, how special it all is. So we do make sure, and the Hilton are very good at that. They're very good at sort of making sure that any dietary stuff is sort of, you know, really looked into a lot of detail.
Yeah, I got an email from Hannah saying, confirming that there was no paprika in it. I'm like, oh my God, thank you. Like, that's amazing. But like, I'm used to, because I have a weird unlisted allergy, I'm used to just having to pre-sniff foods or ask someone beside me, does this have any zest to it? Because if it does, I shouldn't eat it. And honestly, I'm used to pre-eating. I eat before I go to these events. And just because that's what I have to do with food allergies. But you guys have always been made, I mean, with my, you know, literally lame foot, you guys have always made me feel like, even with my weird disabilities, that I'm still welcome. And it matters so much. I'm going to get like all verklempt thinking about it, because, yeah, I mean, I'm wearing my ugly boots, but my ugly boots mean I don't have to come in a, you know, with a walker. So.
No, I think it's great. I mean, the one thing I love about the Cake Master Magazine Awards is that it's very inclusive. A lot of other awards programs, you just have finalists sort of turn up and you don't really have anyone else there. So you went to another awards program recently and it was just finalists. There wasn't anyone else sort of really cheering them on other than maybe one or two, like, guests or family members. But I feel like that always at the Cake Masters Magazine Awards, you've always got people from the community that are not finalists, you know, but are just there to just support and to see and to just really cheer people on. And that's what I absolutely love about the event. And that has been like that from the very beginning. And I love it. I really, really do love it. That's one of my favorite things about doing the awards. It's about bringing everyone together of all skill levels. Yes, you will have the crazy sculpted superstars of the world. And then you have that person who is a hobby baker or someone who doesn't really make things or they don't feel good enough for Cake International, say, competitions yet, but they still feel that they can be part of it and they can enjoy it. And that's what I really, really love. And the other thing I was going to mention about the Cake Masters Awards, and even just Cake International as a weekend in general, a lot of artists are sole traders, and they sit by themselves in a room with maybe only social media connecting them and the radio on, and they're on their own, and they do their craft that they're good at. They churn out these cakes, make sugar flowers, make these awesome models to go on top of cakes. But at the end of the day, they're working for themselves and they're on their own. They don't interact with anyone. I really feel like Facebook and Instagram brings other artists together. Mm-hmm. And it's that night, the Cake Masters Magazine Awards, where you get to meet those people, and everyone in that room, whether you're a finalist or not a finalist, a winner or not a winner, you share that one common thread of cake, and you all understand what it means to go up on stage, to have your face on a video, and how much it means to that one person who's normally quite alone. I think that cake decorating is quite isolating at times, because you are on your own, and you're lucky if you've got a little shop and a team, which is great. But most people do from their own studios or from their own kitchens around the world. And I love how social media brings people together and people actually get to meet people as human beings at CI or at the Kate Masters Magazine Awards. And that's one thing I absolutely love. That is really something that I love to see at the event as well. Or when someone comes to me and they'll say, "Hi, Rosie, you might not know me." And I'm like, "No, I know your Cake business page." They're like, "Oh, really? You know my Cake?" And I'll say Cake because I know the Cake before the person. And if they tell me their business page, I tend to know their a Cake on their business page before I know their face. And it's just lovely to make that human connection, to see the sort of face behind the Cake, behind the Facebook page or the Instagram profile. And I really love it that it happens at the event.
I'm kind of like giddy every time you remember who I am because I never expected. Because that's,
I've known you for some time now, though.
I know, yeah. Well, I don't even know if you remember. We first met, it was the year Mike was out, Mike McCary, yeah. Cake God. Yeah. I was super sick that year and he was like, he was my shoulder to cry on. And I remember on the way out, I came to say goodbye to him and you guys were chatting and I was like, "Oh my God, I just met you." You probably don't even remember that because you would have met 10,000 people that weekend.
I love the community and I love to try and really connect faces to Cakes. That's what I love to do over the weekend. And I do feel I spend so much time on social media anyway, just seeing all these amazing creations. And if I do try and get to meet or find the person holding their Cake rather than just the Cake, mm-hmm. I do try and keep that connection where I think, "Oh yes, I think I know what kind of Cake or what page they are or what Cake they made." There is always tends to be like one Cake that sort of reminds me of a person, and that's how I tend to make the connections. So yeah.
I would go to every Cake show if I could.
Yeah, there are some amazing Cake shows. And, you know, I love the branding that the Austin show does whenever they come out with judges or their themes. I loved last year's where it looked like all the judges were locked up.
Yes.
Absolutely loved
that. Was
that.
So cute. Yes. And some of them managed to get their hands in the right position. So it looked.
I know. Nicholas Lodge really did look like he was locked up.
Yes, that was fabulous. Okay, I have a question for you. I've always wanted to know, do you make cakes?
So, shall I tell you how this whole thing started?
I would love that, yes.
My background is myself and my husband are actually bankers. We worked in banks and accountancy firms. So I actually studied economics at Royal Holloway just outside London. And after I graduated, I got into an accountancy firm. And then from there, I moved into banking. And I have always really been quite a creative person. But I think growing up, I was always sort of steered away from like home ec or sewing or textiles or art. It was always like, no, do something that's going to help you get a really good job. Mm-hmm. Do maths, do science, become a doctor, a lawyer, like typical sort of Asian mentality background where, you know, you have to do something professional, not artsy at all, not artsy at all. So I think I always had that artsy thing inside me, but I was never able to explore it because I loved painting, I loved cooking, I loved sewing, I loved all of that kind of stuff. But I always was kind of steered down this sort of very maths and science and economics driven route, which was fine at the time. I mean, I was a bit of a geek and I loved to study, I won't lie. And so, yeah, I went into the city and I worked really hard to get to a really good sort of place where I was. It was always about achieving that next level and trying to be promoted and all the rest of it. But I booked myself onto a cupcake class back in 2010, and it was outside London, and I think I had to drive like 2 hours to it or something like that. And I always sort of thought that I would love to do something like this, like creative things. And so I went to this cupcake class. I drove for 2 hours, went to this cupcake class, absolutely loved it. And we got to like make different things. So we made little flowers, made a cupcake that looked like a face, and did some buttercream and piping and stuff. So it was like a bit of a free for all. You could do different things. And while I've been working, I always kind of wanted to have my own business, and any idea that I'd sort of come up with. I think maybe when you have a 9-to-5, you have this sort of glamorous feeling that, oh, I'd love to be an entrepreneur. And you watch programs like The Apprentice and you think, yeah, I could do that. I could be an entrepreneur and make lots of money and just not have to work for anyone. I think I had those sort of like glamorous ideas in my mind that I would love to have my own business one day, but could never really think of what I would do. And I think I was really hung up on it being an amazing business idea and it would have to be something awesome. But I carried on working because I couldn't come up with that awesome business idea. But after I did the cupcake class and had a wonderful time, I thought, I had to travel like 2 hours for this class. I'm going to coordinate classes which are closer to London or just outside London. And so that's where I sort of kind of got my idea from. And I told my husband, oh, this is what I'm planning on doing. I'm going to find a teacher, going to hire a hall, going to buy loads of equipment. That was a bit of an excuse for me to buy loads of And this is what I'm going to do. And he's like, yeah, I think you could do that, actually. You know, just as long as you're breaking even and you can, you know, recoup money back or whatever. No, I think that you could do that. So I actually found a teacher. And this teacher said, why don't you come to one of my classes and see how I teach? And I said, yeah, okay. So I got to go to another cupcake class and I absolutely loved it. But she told me I was the best student in her class. And she said, you know, you're really good at this yourself. Why don't you just be the teacher? And I just thought, no, I'm not qualified. I don't know what I'm doing. And she's like, no, I'll teach you. And she told me about the PME course and the diploma that you could do. And so I had some one-to-one intense teaching with her about sugar flowers and what fondant was, what sugar paste was, you know, how to stencil, how to butter, just everything. It was like a crash course. And then very shortly after that, I did the PME diploma in North London to really train, like have that status of, yeah, I know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I told friends and family what I was doing, and I booked a little village hall in a place called Amersham. It's at the end of the Metropolitan line. And I had 10 people come to my first class. And I was just so scared and nervous, felt like a little bit of a fraud, but was fully prepared. And these 10 people had an amazing time. And my class was also a little bit like, you could do stenciling, would do some animal modeling, you could do a face model if you wanted to, you could, you know, use all the PME cutters back then, like the butterfly cutters, we had the dove cutters, all that kind of stuff. And people loved it. They could decide what they wanted to use tools wise, and they could ask me for extra help if they wanted it. And I had an amazing time and I managed to break even, make a little bit of money at the end of it.
That's amazing.
Wow, this is what it like, feels like to be an entrepreneur. But I mean, I was working full time and this was literally maybe one Saturday every month that I would do this. But I sort of caught a bit of a bug that I wanted to do more. Like I wanted to do another class and I needed to advertise now all of a sudden, like how would I get people to my classes? So I there's a little kind of A5 brochure that goes out to 13,000 homes in Amersham. Mm-hmm. And I was told that if I paid for a little ad, 13,000 people would see this. And in each household, there are at least 3 people that would be seeing my ad. And I thought, gosh, I'm going to be overwhelmed with people wanting to come to my class. So I paid £300 for a quarter of a page in an A5 document and waited for the, you know, bookings to come rolling in. And it didn't happen. It just didn't work. I thought, gosh, I've just spent £300 and nothing happened. That's when I opened up a Facebook page, and my Facebook page was basically 12 likes to begin with me, my mum, my husband, his friends, my sisters, all liking my page and liking every single one of the creations because I was baking a lot at the weekend and decorating. I really love the decorating more than I love the baking. So I was just sharing stuff, and then I shared pictures from my first class, and then people from my first class would started to comment and resharing stuff that they had then made after the class. And it started to sort of build. And I was just through activity on Facebook, I was just booking out of all my classes. I was just constantly having to put more and more dates in because people wanted to come to my class. I had someone flying from Cyprus because they saw my class on Facebook. Some poor lady made her husband drive 7 hours down from Scotland to come to this little village hall in Amersham to take my class for a couple of hours.
Wow.
And she saw my class on Facebook, and this Facebook page was just growing arms and legs, and people kept coming back. And then I started to do these like little competitions, say, look, we've had a class today, these are the finished boxes of 12 cupcakes, which one do you like the best, you know, like the one that you like the most? And that started getting activity, and then people started asking questions and wanted advice. And if I didn't know myself, I'd research it and Google it and give them the answers or give them ideas of what might be going wrong. And this community started to build and build and build, and before I knew it, I had 30,000 likes on my page. I had a reach of over like 1.2 million because things were just being shared so much. And it was just overwhelming. And I was working still at the bank. And I didn't really know what was happening with this page. All I knew that it was just like a crazy amount of activity was happening. Then there was a change at Facebook where if you had a page, the timeline, it went from a wall to timeline.
Right.
So it used to be like a notice board where anyone posting anything, it would all come up on like a new news feed almost on the page. Mm-hmm. But then that changed to timeline where you could only see Cake Masters posts. And I got some feedback to say, oh, we can't see what everyone else is talking about or what they're sharing. You'd have to then click on an extra couple of things like the visitors post section to see what other people were then sharing with you. So I decided to pull together all of the bits of things that I liked, cakes that I'd seen, advice that people were asking for, or things that were happening in my next class and things. And it was a 4-page document using Microsoft Desktop Publisher. And if you're old as me and loved Desktop Publisher back then, you will remember WordArt and ClipArt. Mm-hmm. It was just riddled with all of that. But I thought I was a pretty awesome editor back then with no experience of publishing. And I pulled together this 4-page document saying, hey, guys, this is what I've seen over the last week or so. Take a look at it. It's just 4 pages. And believe it or not, that was the first edition of the magazine in its really poor state. That magazine from 4 pages went into like a free online 20-page document to a 30-page document to then a 50-page document. And then I thought, right, will people pay for this? So I put a cheeky 99p on it, and people started paying for this digital magazine that I was now trying to fully produce while I was still working. And yeah, it was really exciting that that's how it sort of worked. Someone then said, look, we need this in print. I would love to have this as a printed magazine. Decided that we would look into actually printing the magazine. And we then decided to go into print. And shortly after that, we were actually in the newsstand. And we became like a full-fledged sort of magazine. And I quit my job in 2013. My husband quit his job in 2014. And that was really our first year of really putting our magazine out there, letting people know about it, letting advertisers know about it, and becoming this really big thing that it is today. And it's just, sometimes I think, and I look back on that one cupcake class that I went to, if I never went there, I swear I'd still be working. If I didn't open the Facebook page, I definitely wouldn't have Cake Masters magazine. And it's weird because businesses sometimes start with a business first, and then they have to build with social media. While we started with social media and had no business, and the business sort of grew from that, which is why I think it's always been quite community-based. And we now just have under 1 million followers on Facebook. We've got 100,000 followers on Instagram with Facebook verified. I'm a Facebook ambassador where I talk about my story at Facebook events. And yeah, I've just never looked back, and it's just been such a huge roller coaster ride from the beginning right to the end. Even with the awards as well, it's just been something that was like a spin-off of something that we wanted to do, and then it just grew and grew and grew. And yeah, it's just really exciting to be here talking to you about it right now as to how it all started.
That's amazing. Like, because you have, I know of at least 3 national editions that you have of the magazine. Yeah. Is it 3 or is it more now?
We have the Indian version and the UK version at the moment, and we're looking into potentially getting a Spanish version done too.
Oh, I thought there was a French version.
We did do a French version, but it didn't quite work out from a French market perspective.
Okay.
So we decided that we gave it over 1.5 years, because I think in business you have to give everything a chance. And we really, really invested a lot of money behind it, and it just wasn't quite working out. So we decided, right, let's just keep digital. And then we unfortunately had to close that bit down. But we learned a lot from that, and learned that not everything will work. And I think it's important to sometimes step back and take stock of what you're doing rather than continuously throw money, time and effort at something that potentially might not work. Yeah.
I mean, it's part of any business. I'm in a group right now that I'm going to have to self-bleep, because there's a group called This Cake S.
Okay.
And it's a group of people, many of whom you would know, who basically who've had cake businesses and either are thinking of stopping or they've scaled back, or they've done like what myself and I just had Mary Carmen on, and I know Trinity Chapman, where we just set our prices so high that no one will order because we're tired. So it's our whole industry is full of leap forward, step back, try this, that doesn't work. I mean, Julie Osher talked about, when she came out with her own airbrush, that it just wasn't the quality she wanted. So she put a lot into it, but then she had to pull it back. So yeah, that's really endemic to the industry, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think you must try things, but if it doesn't work, and it must be really hard when you're passionate about something, and it's only really people on the outside that really see that it's not really working. I think when you're the ideas person or you really want something to work, you do need that support around you or a support network around you or a sounding board or a mentor to say, look, what have you achieved? Are you going to achieve? Is it now time to change direction? And You know what? That's sometimes the hardest thing to do. It really is, especially when you've invested so much time in a product or a project or an idea. And I think it's sometimes braver to stop.
Yeah. No, I mean, was it two or three years ago when I was really stressed about my entry? I could have been for Austin, could have been for Sia. I don't remember. I was stressing about an entry. And my husband said to me, you know, you don't have to compete. And I looked at him like he'd grown a third head. Like I was like, what are you not compete? What's the point of going to the show if I don't compete? But, you know, having just gone to CI for the first time, not competing, I really enjoyed not rushing in. I really enjoyed not caring about what, I mean, I cared about other people's awards. I cared about the entries, but I had no stress about that for me. And I enjoyed that. And in a couple of years, the bug will bite again and I'll compete again. But yeah, it's totally valid to make these different choices, and we beat ourselves up and say, we can't. And then you do, and you're like, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think, you know, honestly, when it's not fun anymore, there needs to be a step back. I think we need to take a step back and realize, why am I doing this if I'm not having fun?
Yeah, that's it exactly.
Yeah, so I think it's a hard thing to do. I mean, I love to hold on to things and, you know, I really want things to work. And it was a sad moment when something doesn't work. But yeah, I think people do need to be strong when they do decide to actually stop something and move in a different direction.
Yeah, but I can see how Spanish language would be huge because not just for the, obviously we know so many decorators from Spain, but having lived in Texas, the sugar arts industry, you know, in the Spanish speaking world, I mean, Austin's show is constantly trying to get translators in all of our classes as much as we can because it increases the demographic hugely.
Yeah, I mean, when we were in Miami, we have people who do not speak a word of English and they still buy the magazine to look at the pictures and then try to follow the tutorials just by looking at the pictures. Miami has this, you know, huge number of non-English speaking people at the cake show. It was so amazing to me that people were still buying it. They were still buying, you know, the magazine just to look through the pictures. It would be lovely to have like a different version to help them. I think it would be quite a popular thing.
Okay, whatever you're doing right now, whether it's actually working on a project, or if you're washing up, or you're stuck in traffic, whatever you've got going on, take a deep breath. Everything's going to be okay, because you're awesome. Well, I mean, the pictures are amazing. My six-year-old still struggles with reading, and if I'm not careful, she makes off with my... If we come home and it's just come in the mailbox, she's going to grab it and try and run away with it. So I have to, like, hide it from her until I've read it, and I'm always, like, 2 months behind reading anything that comes in the house. Although I told, because Jean's on the cover of this month, I'm like, no, okay, I'm going to read it this week. So, I mean, even when I read it, I don't read every word of every tutorial because sometimes I know those techniques. But what interests me is I'm sort of skimming along the photos and going, yep, that's what, wait, hang on. What did that person do? All right, back up two steps. And then I read and go, oh, that's an interesting different way to do it. Oh, I'm going to try that. Or maybe I'll think, no, I'm not going to do it that way. But like, I love learning how other people do things that may even get the same result that I get, but in a different way, because maybe it's better.
Yeah, or quicker, or more cost-effective,
And that's what I love about the demos at CI. That's why, you know, I record them for the podcast, so there's a little bit of, I'm justifying it for work as if I ever get paid for this. But like, I love just sitting there, seeing how people make stuff, even, like, I know how to make a face, but I'll watch, there was two CIs ago, I think I recorded three different faces. It was Zoe, Carlos, and Sachiko.
Yeah.
Those are three very different faces, but and three very different techniques, and all completely equally valid and amazing.
Wow.
And that's what I think one of the things I love about the magazine is it's more of a how-to magazine.
Yeah, it's always been sort of tutorial-based, but we have recently started to put in, say, some more product features or even some kind of life stories. We've actually had people write in with the reason for certain cakes. Mm-hmm. And that was quite a lovely feature that we did. We also did another feature on baking for therapy, where people started cake because it was their therapy, and then it just turned into a business. So that was a really lovely sort of emotional connection that you could make with the cake artists behind the cakes as to why cake brought them out of a certain type of depression or a hard time in their life. I love actually sharing stories, like bringing the person back into it. And we hope to be conducting a few more interviews next year.
Yeah, and I like the feature where people talk about how they redid their kitchens.
Oh, yeah.
I love that.
It was really good.
It gives me hope. I'm in a Cambridge rental, and I'm not allowed to change anything in here. It's so sad. But I look at it, and I live vicariously through American giant kitchens. Or I like seeing my friends, you know, when you had Heather Sherman on with her amazing basilica cake there. I mean, I knew about that cake from before anyone knew about that cake because she was sending me things. What do you think? You know, because we're good friends. But, you know, seeing my friends get interviewed, it makes it so warm fuzzy.
Oh, yeah. I love doing the interview section.
I even like the afternoon tea, and I don't drink tea and I don't eat pettifor. So I have learned so much about British afternoon tea from reading that column.
There are so many lovely afternoon teas in and around London. And I love afternoon teas, especially the ones which are themed. And I don't think people realize how much skill goes into all these tiny little pastries that can literally be swallowed in one go. But the pastry chefs are so highly trained, and so much effort goes into designing and presenting, and even the flavor combinations. Mm-hmm. Like some London institutions will not be able to ask for a change in the menu. Say if you want something swapped for something else, not for dietary, because they have a specific amount of ingredients for that particular day. Mm-hmm. Some of the ingredients are really kind of precise or expensive or rare even. So I love it when during an afternoon tea, the pastry chef actually comes up and talks to you and you ask them, what's your favorite? And sometimes it will be the one that's the easiest to make or the one that's the hardest to make or the one that has so many different elements, but you as the eater of the afternoon tea have no idea that they've had to set this first and they've made that sponge differently and then they had to do a syrup for this. And it's amazing hearing it from their side of the table, where they actually take you through like 10 different elements for this chocolate cake in front of you. And I think there's just an extra level of exceptional level of skill when it comes to some afternoon teas in some establishments in London. And I love that. I really love that element of it.
Okay, we probably have listeners who aren't subscribers, so we'll make sure that when I put out the show notes, but it's cakemastersmagazine.com or is it .co.uk?
.com. It is. Cakemastersmagazine.com.
Right.
And as soon as you're on the homepage, we have the magazines available, and if you visit the shop, you can subscribe. We're also in App Store and Google Play. So we have a huge number of people that download the magazine directly to their phones.
Yeah, and people should realize that like, because, yes, it's a British magazine, but you don't have to pay overseas shipping because you can have the digital.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like although we're based out of the UK, we have such a global audience and a global reach. And because we were born from social media, which has no geographical boundaries, we've always been quite an international feeling sort of magazine.
Yes, it is. Because, again, I see my American friends, and the auto translations that happen in my head are very fun. Because as someone who's lived in and baked in three different countries, Canada, U.S., and here, and married to an Aussie Kiwi, what do you mean when you say flour?
Yeah, that could mean anything.
Right? So I know when I'm reading, okay, the American recipe, they mean AP flour. The British person means plain flour, and Australian flour is a whole different ball game. But I know to look for that, and so it strikes me. It, like I see it as, okay, hang on, where is this person writing from? Right there in San Diego. I need to think about that with this recipe, because it is a global magazine. And that is a tricky thing. In fact, people keep telling me I should write a blog or a book on all the translations of food.
Yeah, that'd be really interesting.
I'll get right to it in all that spare time. I totally have. Yeah. Well, I mean, we know sugar paste fondant because that's like the running joke. But yeah, going back to what we were saying with the awards, I have to say my favorite part is dancing, because that's, you don't get that at like a regular award show. I love that we're out there dancing together. And again, like what you were saying, it's the biggest stars with those of us who nobody knows.
I wouldn't put it like that. I really do feel like that evening is just such a community of people together.
That's what I mean. They're all together.
Yeah, and you just see people taking photos, and I don't know if you noticed this year, we all had back again the photo challenges, where
yes,
one of the photo challenges was with take a picture with a new friend, like go find someone new and take a picture. And I think if you're not on a table that is already 10 people or organized for 10 people that you know, sometimes people who are just sat with other people, they just have a great night because they're meeting new people for the first time.
Yep.
So I do think, I know Cake International is the next day, and some of the businesses that have the stands have to rush off and don't really get time to dance. But the music was great. And it was just really, it is a lovely sort of atmosphere of just people having fun.
Yeah.
I do like that. And having a live band, it always just feels a little bit different than having a DJ. So.
Yeah. And well, and they were good and they were fun, and it was music I knew, which makes me happy because I'm nearly 47. It was, you know, but it was, yeah, like people were singing along and dancing along, and it, I feel like it's the greatest party I go to every year.
So. Oh, that's really good. It's the greatest party I go to, too.
Well, but you have to work for it, so I hope you get to enjoy it. Do you get to relax and enjoy it?
I think it is a very stressful weekend, and we had, close to 600 people this year at our event. When it all starts, it's over in a blur, I feel, and I feel like I'm not able to really enjoy it properly, because you are quite stressed just in general.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many different elements that happen on that night, whether it be the audio visual, whether it be the sound, are all the winners in the room, are all the presenters in the room, you know. For example, the wedding cake winner missed her flight.
Yeah.
And so everything was prepared for her to be in the room and for the presenter to know that she would come up on stage. So that was just something that has happened very last minute, and she wasn't in the room, and she told us that she'd missed her flight. And it was far too late to broadcast any acceptance video or anything like that. So there are a lot of things that happen on the night. And, you know, people turning up late just means that we have to start the evening later. And it just makes the evening longer. So there are things that stress you out, but there's only so much that you can control when you're handling that many people. Overall, it just, I do love it. And I find the evening very emotional, especially when people are going up on stage and really sharing what it all means to them,
mm-hmm,
to win something and then to get that validation from people in the room. I do feel that, you know, it is really a lovely night. It really, really is a lovely night.
Talking about organizing the people, I don't know how many times that announcement has to play to tell people to take their seats.
Yeah, I think it played like 6 times this time.
At least. And I was already sitting down because I'm saving my feet for dancing later. So, you know, we did our initial photos when we came in and sat down, and we were just starting to giggle every time it said that, because like we were sitting down and looking around going, we're the only ones sitting down. Because we were already trying to post the wacky pictures. We didn't follow the list very well of the challenges. We just were posting our weird pictures and going, let's see if we get their attention doing this. So, yeah.
It is a really good night.
It is. And I mean, as someone who does, you know, event management stuff on the Austin side, because we used to have a dinner with that and we stopped because it was too hard. It was just so hard, particularly at the end of the Saturday show day. We would have to, you know, we were all tired and wanted to go eat, but now we had to organize a dinner. So I have mad respect for how much work you're putting into that. And then on an awards on top of it, we weren't even doing awards. We were just doing like, you know, a nice dinner.
So, it is quite administrative, you know, making sure that everyone's got the right food and making sure that we've gone through everything. But the seating plan is also quite, you know, certain companies have specifically said that they don't want to sit with other companies.
Oh, yeah. Fine.
Mm-hmm. You know, everyone has competitors and all this kind of stuff. Or certain artists have said they can't sit with other artists. Or, you know, it does get quite complicated. It's like a really messy wedding seating plan. But no, it all comes together in the end. It all does really come together in the end, and everyone has such a lovely time. I really like the whole quality of your podcast.
Oh, thank you. I keep saying when I make money, which there's no plans to make money on it, right? There's software I could buy that would actually improve the audio quality that would record it internally on the Mac. But because it's Mac software, it's like 10 times more expensive than Windows software. So yeah, that's something I'd love to do. I'd love to improve it. So if you think it's good and you're in, you know, media and broadcasting, then that's a huge compliment.
Oh, no, I really did like it. I really thought your podcast was brilliant.
Oh, I'm just going to bask in that. That's my Cake Masters Award right there. I'm just going to say that's my award. Because the running joke is I'm never going to win a Cake Masters Award unless in like 10 years you have one for longest running podcast. Not best podcast. I'm not saying I'm the best. I'm just saying I'm the one who's going to keep slogging through it. Because all these people start podcasts and 3 episodes in, they're like, that was a lot of work. And it fades off. So I will be the longest running one in 10 years.
That'll be my award. I know a lot of work goes into podcasts and just production in general. I mean, pulling the magazine together.
Oh, yeah.
So many kind of elements that happen, and the girls do all of that now, and getting the content. It is a big undertaking.
Oh, yeah.
And I know for something like this, where you're going to have to then re-edit stuff and make sure I sound okay, make sure you sound okay, make sure the context that I started everything, I know how difficult it can be.
Yeah, sometimes where it gets really tricky is where there's a good conversation, but it has, for whatever reason, some elements that need to come out. It could just be background noise, or it could be someone said, you know, I shouldn't have mentioned that person, edit that out. But now I have to try to make it sound contextual.
Yeah.
And that can be tricky. So that's harder than editing prose. But I'm just going to go ahead and bet, and you don't have to name names, but I'm going to bet you've had cake artists submit prose that was absolutely torture to edit.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I know. Because I've been a professional editor. I know. Yeah. It's that like I said, I was in .com journalism before I moved to the US and didn't have a green card and started making cakes for lulz because I had no green card. Even now, for, you know, the cake shows and stuff, we get people's bios, and if English isn't their first language, they get an excuse. But some bios we get, I'm like, okay, let me hit this with a hammer. So I bet you get submissions that are work intensive. Yes. It's okay, you don't have to confirm.
yeah, we do have to sometimes tidy up a lot of the content in the magazine. And sometimes English is not the first language, but we get that. We wouldn't want to not include someone because English wasn't.
Oh, yeah, but those are easier to edit because they kind of expect editing.
Mm.
It's often the person who thinks they're writing really well. And I go on too long. I know I go on too long. So I'm aware that I'm an editor's nightmare in that regard. But at least my sentences are complete sentences. It can be hard. I bet. When people submit photos, they can't all be good photos to start.
No. So we've actually had to reject some tutorials because the photo quality has not been good enough. And it's sad because sometimes people have spent days on a tutorial or done it over a couple of days. And the photo quality is just not good enough. I mean, 9 times out of 10, it's good. And 9 times, or we will try and use the an edited version of their images to have a short tutorial. But there has been 1 or 2 occasions where we've literally have said, I'm really sorry. And they then resubmitted something better. But yeah, we are sort of like very heavy into content. You know, we get given so much content. There's a lot of people who would love to be in the magazine, and we love to try and feature as many different types of people as possible. Yeah.
Okay, so let's say someone's listening to this right now and they think, I want to be in Cake Masters magazine.
Yep.
How is the best way to do that?
So they can reach out to us on social media, whether it be a message via our Facebook page or a message on Instagram. They can send an email to the content inbox, which is content@cakemastersmagazine.com. If they have any ideas of a tutorial or a technique that they do slightly differently that they would love to let people know about, or if it's something that they've always just wanted to be published and they would love to do a little tutorial for us, they can just send us their details or a link to their portfolios of work, and we have themes throughout the year. So, for example, January is one-tier wonders, and it is just a one-tiered cake that will be different. That will have a different design. I always love the January edition because it literally is just one-tiered cakes that we have tutorials on. We have fashion and fabrics. We'll have a metallic one. We have birthdays, general occasion type cakes, themes where the color is a really important part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Just reach out to us. A lot of people think that we invite people. And it's only by invitation. I was at an American cake show a couple of years back, and a really well-known artist came to me and said, Rosie, don't you like me? I was just really, like, taken aback. I just thought, oh, my God, of course I like you. And this person is a lovely, bubbly person, like, always is on Facebook and is always sharing, like, their story with cake and stuff. And I said, why did you ask if I didn't like you? And she goes, you've never asked me to be in your magazine. And I said, I don't ask anyone. And she just looked at me and she goes, you don't ask anyone? And I said, no, people tell me if they want to be in the magazine. We get sent stuff. People send us stuff. You know, so send me what you want to do and we will help you be in the magazine. And I think she was just really confused that she thought it worked a different way. We also have a contributors newsletter. So every month or so we will say, hey, guys, what is your favorite tool and why? Or, hey guys, do you have a blue cake? Send it to us. And we have a separate newsletter for that, which you can sign up to via our website. It's at the very bottom of our website. We just have a normal newsletter and then our contributors newsletter. So the feature that we do where we asked about people's cake stories, we actually went out to our contributors newsletter and said, hey, if you have a really interesting cake with an interesting story behind it, please do let us know. Also, the baking for therapy, we went out to the using our newsletter. We said, you know, is there anything that you would love to share about your journey in cake that has been therapeutic? And would you like to be part of this feature? So there are lots of different ways of reaching out to us. And you just please do reach out. You know, people get featured by reaching out to us. And we won't know that you want to be featured if you don't reach out to us. I'm available on Facebook a lot of the time. Most of my posts are public. I'm available on Messenger. My email address is editor@cakemastersmagazine.com. I always love to hear from people, and I do my very best to try and get back to most people, or one of my team will. So, yeah, I mean, I love to try and be as inclusive and as have my arms open wide to different people featuring in the magazine. And it's, you know, you don't have to have a huge social media following or any social media following. And as long as you can demonstrate, you can send us me good quality pictures, that's mm-hmm. all I need.
Yeah, well, that's amazing to know. I mean, I kind of assumed, I knew that you would take submissions because I see you throw it open frequently. Mm-hmm. But even I kind of assumed you asked people.
We can ask people. So if people have asked us in the past that they'd love to be part of the magazine, we will go out to them. A couple of our tutorials are in association with our advertisers. So they ask us to find people on their behalf. But a lot of the time it is just people telling us that they want to do a tutorial for us on Instagram or Instagram stories. Sometimes you'll see a post that says, do you want to do a tutorial for us? Send us your email address. And it's those people that send in their email address that we go back out to. And then just say, hey, so what kind of ideas do you have? These are the sort of themes that we have. And then we sort of take it from there. But a lot of the tutorials is just, you know, people coming out to us and asking us.
Okay, that's good to know. And also, people need to think about, I'm sure you have at least several months lead time for holiday themes.
Yes. So we actually had pretty much the whole of the December issue done in October.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, October is our November deadline. So it can sometimes be like we are talking about summer themes when it's still really cold outside.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to have that lead time so that we can actually spend time with the content, correcting it, looking at the language, and actually looking at images to see if they're good enough, and then, of course, placing it in a suitable format in the magazine. So there is quite a lot of work that happens after the content comes in. So, yeah, we do work to quite early lead times, and sometimes people just need to sort of bear that in mind, that we'd already got all the Christmas stuff in very early. Yeah, so we're already working on, like, spring themes for next year.
Yes, I would assume that. I mean, even small newsletters like ICES, if you want to submit something to the ICES newsletter, they have a 2-month. If you submit to ICES right now, the earliest you're getting in is February. And that's just a small thing. So I having worked in journalism, I mean, our deadlines were shorter, you know, with .com stuff. But still, yeah, I can imagine it must be months in advance. So people who shouldn't come to you the week before St. Patrick's Day and say, I have a St. Patrick's Day tutorial, because that's not going to help.
Yeah, because some people get really confused when they come to us in February telling us about a Valentine's themed bit of content. We've already sent the magazine to print in January, so it's way too late. So yeah, I think sometimes people don't realize how early that we are actually sending these magazines to print, or even how early we have to actually produce and bring all the content together. Yeah.
With people who are doing collabs too. So obviously, I think you feature one each time, right? At least one?
We try and feature as many of them as possible, and just purely down to timelines, a collab might have come out a couple of months ago, but by the time it gets into the magazine, it might be a lot later, like a couple of months after, because the deadline that they would have just missed for to be in the month afterwards.
Yeah.
Or we're already too full with content. So I think a lot of the time, if a collaboration is not time sensitive or around a certain date in the year, we do still try and publish them. We publish a lot of the collaborations on our website, because I just feel like posting in one place and then that be it is not great. I love it that people have spent all this time creating something and they've come together as a group to have a theme of creations.
Yes.
I love being able to give that extra little bit of sort of marketing or platform for these collaborations. And the one thing I absolutely love about collaborations is that cake artists get to make what cake artists want to make.
Mm-hmm.
When you're a cake artist and you have an order, you're making an order for somebody else. They'll tell you the color, they'll tell you what kind of decorations they want, and they'll tell you the flavors and how they want it. In a collaboration, you as a cake artist can really go to town with what you want to do. And I feel like some of the most creative pieces of work have come out of collaborations. And that's why I just love celebrating it, even at the awards, because I feel like it's such an important thing. Some of the messages behind collaborations are also absolutely lovely. I think there was a collaboration on baby loss, and it was just such an emotional connection. I can't remember the name of the collaboration, but you'll remember it. I think you will.
Yeah, I remember.
Just a few people with Liz Marrick, Sharon Bond, where they actually spoke about things that they suffered with. I also have a really special place for the Sugar Art for Autism collaboration.
Yeah.
My nephew is actually autistic, and I understand he's quite far along the spectrum, and he's a non-verbal. So I absolutely love the creations that come out of that, especially this year, where it was a little bit different, and they've linked up with the designer, and also how some of the people who actually create these creations have autistic children or know somebody who's on the autistic spectrum. So I was really pleased that they were shortlisted as a finalist, and it just meant something a little bit more, and it was a little bit different. So collaborations have a really special place in my heart. I know sometimes people think, oh God, another collaboration, oh God. But, you know, I think it's great, because they are truly creative, and people take time out to do these things.
Mm-hmm.
And I love collaborations. I love clicking through all of them and seeing new artists even. I've found new people from collaborations. Yeah, so I really do love them.
I also wanted to mention that anyone who's not following your social media should, because I can personally attest to how lucrative it is to enter the contests.
Yeah. We do have a lot of giveaways. So we have Friday freebies, and it's a super busy time at the moment. So we have Win It Wednesdays as well. Also, every month in the magazine, we have a big giveaway that just is linked to an advertiser in the magazine. So I think this year, this month, it's a sweet stamp. So you can win a whole bundle of their stuff, and it's really lovely, lovely things. And in December, from the 1st of December, we will have our Christmas countdown. So every day, we will be giving out a product. And some of the companies who are part of our Christmas countdown have been so generous. So it's definitely something to watch out for, because we have lots to give away.
Yeah, that's where I've won several. I won a whole fabric cake bundle of Christmas molds.
Wow.
I've won, there was one time, that was a Christmas countdown one a few years ago. There was one you were doing, you had several pots of rainbow dust glue. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I never would have bought that product, and I love it. And they've sold me on that forever. I will always buy that, because I tried other glues and I didn't like them. And then I tried that one. I was like, oh, this one actually holds. I really like it. There have been a few others that there's been like a pen or something like that. I think I've won at least three or four. And I was joking with you that about this. And you said, we have to put a stop to that. And I was like, no. But I'll share the ones.
Well, you've got to be in it to win it.
Yeah.
If you're in it and you're entering every time, you're obviously going to win it at one point. So.
Well, that's the thing. If you keep doing it, and because I can enter the UK only ones, which probably get fewer numbers than the international or the US ones. So I think that just ups the stats. But even like sometimes there are ones that I don't need. Like I don't have time to go up to Liverpool to the Renshaw Academy.
Right.
For a class, but you've sometimes had giveaways for that. I will share that because I know people who want to win that. So I often share the ones that it's like, oh, I already have that tool, but I will share it because I want my friend to win that tool.
We have some great giveaways, some fantastic products.
Yeah, everyone should follow. You're one of the people, because I think you can list up to 50 pages that you are see first.
Yeah,
you're one of my see first.
Because
I want to enter things. Because, and not just that, but you post the eye candy and the, you know, the tutorials and stuff too.
Yeah.
But yes, and I do enter the, because just last night I did the crossword for the sweet stamp. And I'm terrible at crosswords. I'm like.
Competition, so yeah, you just need to send that in.
Yeah.
I love doing those ones, because the monthly competition is also published in the magazine as well, and we put it on our blog and make sure that people know about it, because that prize is always a good bundle.
Yeah, it is. I may have won one of those. I can't remember. It's been a lot. I do them a lot. I'm curious. Do you guys actually sit and check all the answers, or you just draw a winner and make sure that it's answered?
We draw a winner and make sure that it's correct.
It is correct.
Because some people do still get it wrong.
Right. Because there have been a few like where it's count the number of or find the number of. I mean, a crossword, you kind of know if you've got it wrong or not, because it won't fit. Search of words.
Searches are really confusing, because I think in America or in different places around the world, you have to find the word that doesn't appear. So people enter saying all the words are there. And we're like, yeah, you're supposed to find all 10 words. And they just say, well, we can't find the one that's missing. So I think in different places, word searches are different. Or what you'll do is you'll have people find the first 9 words and not bother to look for the last one, because they think that is the answer. So sometimes you'll just get a word search with just the last word as their submission, because they think that is the word that they won by telling us the word that they haven't found, because they found the previous 9, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah, okay, and that's a different kind of puzzle, yeah. Yeah,
say find all 10 or how many words there are, but I think in around the world it's different. That's something that we've definitely learned. Yeah.
I just always load the graphics into like preview, and then like last night I was making little individual letters to put in the crosswords, or when it's the word search, you know, just draw the circle around it. Which it'd probably be faster if I printed it and took a photo and sent it, but I don't know. I'm just doing it on the digital.
Yeah, some people do that. They print it and then send a photo in.
Because at first I was like, how do I enter it? Like, I'm clicking on it on the website going, this isn't Java-based, I can't. And then I'm like, oh, I have to actually, yeah. So people should do it, because you can win and follow you, because you can get good stuff. Like,
yeah, we do have a lot of, like, very generous advertisers or companies that work with us, and the giveaways do tend to be pretty awesome. And yeah, you just got to be in it to win it.
That's even kind of why I like the print magazine, because sometimes there's a freebie with the print magazine.
Sometimes. We haven't done one for some time now, but we have had some, say, cover mounts for the UK readership. That would tend to be like a color or a mold even we had, or some dust we've had with rainbow dust.
Mm-hmm. There's been some pens.
Yes, there have been pens as well.
There was a marvelous mold, an onlay mold.
Yes, yes. Yep. Dominic from Marvelous Molds designed that especially. I think one of our very first cover mounts was actually Cake Lace. And Cake Lace actually gave us a strip to wrap around the magazine, which then rebagged. And that was really nice because you've got some pre-made Cake Lace to actually have a play with.
Yeah. Oh, because you were giving that out at Austin too, because I brought that back. That's when I subscribed.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we had some of those issues left over. I must have taken them with me.
Yeah, because I deliberately subscribed in Austin because, again, being PR type person for Austin, I wanted you guys to like Austin. So I wanted to increase the numbers of subscriptions you got at that show. And whoever it was who took the card, I signed up with my UK Lloyd's bank account card, and she looked at it funny and she said, "This is a British card." And of course I speak like this and I'm in Austin, so that was really confusing.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, I live in Cambridge. It's okay. It's legit. I can pay in pounds. It's okay.
Yep.
So, okay. I also wanted to talk to you about, you have the best panel of awards judges for the Cake Masters Awards. How do you get those people involved? How does that go on?
So I feel that the world of cake is very different now, and I feel that everything is on social media, and you'll find people that have a lot of followers and all that kind of thing. But our judges are the guys that started first or were very early on when it came to sugar flowers, or when people actually bought books and educated themselves because social media just wasn't available. Eddie Spence, MBE, who has now fully retired, and unfortunately this was his last time at the awards, has been a judge for since 2014, helping to judge the Royal Icing category. And then you have the likes of Nicholas Lodge, who is very good at, you know, posting on social media, but he is somebody who has been in the industry for such a long time. I have books that are authored by him that I didn't even know had his name on them. And of course, then his sugar flowers, and then how he has sort of stepped into being a head judge at a lot of international cake shows. And then also his product line, Alan Dunn, I have to mention, because he won Lifetime Achievement.
Yes, the video!
At the awards. And, you know, he is someone who has been a sugar flowers person from the very, very beginning. And I think it's important to remember these people, because these people are the people who wrote the books that, you know, people with the massive social media followings, you know, learnt from or have taken inspiration from. And I love having these guys as judges, and that we can remember them and that we can value them because they're the ones who sort of started it first. We did have two new faces who are newer to the cake industry. So we had Silver Mancini for her modeling skills. And then we also had Emma Jane Morris from Emma Jane Cake Design. Again, they're past winners, and they are really sort of really smashing it in their part of cake decorating, or in their arena, whether it be big cakes, like, I don't know if you saw the polar bear at Cake in
Stratford.
That was just incredible. She did the trapeze artist for us last year, and again, just the attention and the level of detail that she goes into is amazing. And then recently I saw, I think just yesterday, Silvia Mancini, and the modeling that she does. There was a Royal Family scene that she did. It's just incredible. The amount of emotion that she gets into a bit of sugar paste is incredible, from the eyes to the smile to the sadness to the happiness that she can just put on a face made out of fondant is incredible. And I think that, you know, the judging panel is something that's really important, and they're the ones that, you know, pick the winners for our skills-based categories. This year they all had to give marks out of 5 for like execution, techniques, variety, use of color, lots of different things. And if that, all of those scores add up, and the scores are really close, but it is those scores that then decide who wins wedding cake or royal icing or sculpted cake. And then in a couple of the categories, it was really, really close. So I think on showpieces, Jessica and Carla, who were our past winners, went up to present. There was only 1 point between the Great Barrier Reef and the showpiece that was in second place.
Right.
So it is always really, really close. But it's really exciting to announce them on the night. And yes, our judges do look through portfolios of work. And then they go through scoring, and it's important. It's an important part of the awards, and they're important to our industry. And they do love, you know, being part of the awards night and being recognised as the judges and the people who are important for awarding and ultimately deciding the winners for the skills-based categories.
Okay, so you get a bazillion nominations.
Yeah.
Are you then winnowing it down at all? And then the judge for modeling or whatever, the judges for modeling are then looking at all those? Or are they looking at the bazillion nominations?
No, I don't think that. I would love for them to help out with the bazillion.
I was thinking they can't possibly have time.
A shortlisting process at Cake Masters. And part of that shortlisting process is filtering out the nominations that have come in more than once.
Right.
So we do then just have a definitive list of, say, X hundred for one category, and then we start looking at portfolios and all the links and all the comments, you know, that people actually say, take a look at this cake was amazing, this cake should win sculpted cakes. And then we look at that particular cake, and then we look at their portfolio, and that's how the whittling starts to happen. You know, it's all good and well just putting one person's cake name down, but if you don't tell us why, you need to tell us why. And the same for products as well. You need to tell us why you like this product. What is it about this product? Don't just give us the product name, because that doesn't really say anything. You need to really tell us, why should this person win, or why should this business win? Why is this product epic? Tell us. So the shortlisting process is quite involved, and, you know, people do go out there and ask for nominations, and that's absolutely fine. But when it does come to the skills-based categories, we just filter out all the ones that have more than one. So we have a definitive list that we can actually work through, and a cleaner list that we work through.
Right. And so going back to products, that changed this year. We should talk about that.
Yeah. So the product is something that I have always tried to keep, and I have always tried to ensure that we do and test in the best possible way. When I actually worked in banking, I worked in compliance. And what that meant is that it was very rules-based, and everything had to be fair. Everything had to be fair for the customer. Everything had to be fair for the banks. It was around that time, just before I left, where all the banks were getting in the press for doing bad things or charging wrong things. And my role when I was in banking was to sort that out and make sure everything was fair. So I feel like I've always had this sort of weird sense of like a moral compass, or this fairness like instilled in me, especially when it comes to the awards. I feel like, well, is that fair? You know, is that fair that person, are we doing it the right way? You know, is it fair how we're doing the shortlisting? Is it fair how we're doing the testing? So when it came to the products, we thought, right, the only way that we can select a winner, and this is in previous years, is by making sure that we are testing and scoring, and we add up the numbers at the end, and whoever has the highest score wins. That's fair. And that way you have, like, I think we had at one point a panel of 20 decorators, and 20 people would get these products, and 20 people would then give us their marks. But these products that were being shortlisted in the first place via the nominations process were all really good products.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really, I felt, you know, especially after last year, I felt like in the top five, say, when we added everything up, they were all deserving. And you were literally half a point or 1 point away from that person being at the top. And I just thought, you know, we really need to change this. There are so many amazing products in the industry. There are so many amazing companies in the industry, and so much money that is put behind product development, putting something out there, it failing, improving it, putting it out there again, packaging it, branding it. And I thought, you know what, we really need to change it this year. We really need to look at this properly. And we did actually go out to a couple of companies in the industry, and we had a feedback form for them to say, look, we're planning on changing the product award. What do you think of this idea? What do you think of that idea? Do you think we should have a product award? You know, we actually asked all these questions, because these awards are for our industry, and, you know, the industry needs to be part of it. So we asked them about the edible, non-edible split. We asked them about how they felt it should be tested. We even asked them if they felt that it should be done on the number of nominations. Should this be a category that just goes down to the number of nominations? But then to me, that felt like new products or unknown companies would never win. Yeah. If it's just down to the number of nominations. So we really did get some good industry feedback, and a lot of companies, like really important CEOs of businesses, replied. And they gave us their, you know, their thoughts on what we should be doing or what they thought would be good for us to try and incorporate, which is why we decided to actually have the split, which I think is good, because then you can get to award more people. Mm-hmm. And I felt like this year that we just really needed to look at all the products that had been nominated. And, you know, there's a certain mold company that I'm sure you'd know that did win an award this year, has been nominated every single year as a finalist and has never won because it was always just a couple of points out. And, you know, it was just so sad that, you know, Dominic would come to the awards. I'll say his name. It was Dominic.
Yeah, I know, because I talked to him about it.
But he would just miss out. And his onlays are ingenious. Yes. You know, his flexibets, ingenious. And these guys spend money developing this stuff. And then you've got the Karen Davies mold where Alice, her daughter, actually designs these things. And, you know, she actually creates something, pushes it into something, and that's a mold. And you know, they were just missing out. And, you know, I just felt like we just need to change this. And also Etty, who is a very small business, mm-hmm. and has high quality, expensive tools that people tools, may not want to pay for immediately up front, but had such great feedback in the nominations process. And even when we did a further independent testing with a group of cake decorators, they just loved her tools. And I just thought, you know, we need to change this. We really need to change this. And we really need to award people. And we actually had 10 finalists in the edible and non-edible, and 10 awards that we were going to give out. So we were going to give out 20. We were thinking about, oh my God, that's a lot of awards. That's more than the rest of the awards. But we just really felt that when it came to colors, when it came to fondant, everyone has their go-to fondant. Everyone has their go-to sort of product that they like to go to. And I felt like for this year that we just really wanted to recognize, and which is why we changed the name of the award from Best Product, which is just one, to Product Excellence.
Right.
So we felt that we would, for this year only, we would have 8 finalists and all 8 would win for Product Excellence. Next year, we will have 5 in the edible and 5 in the non-edible, and make it a little bit more, you know, exclusive to just being 5 products. I know there are so many products out there, and, you know, we really want to make sure that companies know that we are seeing how much money goes into product development and research even. And we want to use the Product Excellent platform as a place to actually recognize these products,
right,
and actually give them a boost, you know, let people know about these amazing things. It was a big change for us because it wasn't just one award being given out. And I think people on the night who were a finalist knew that there was more than one award being given out, but they didn't know that everyone was going to win. I'm kind of glad that we used it as this year to go out with it. And my speech was actually quite hard to put together because I didn't know how to sort of build up to the fact that everyone was going to win. But everyone who has won is really appreciative, and they really understand why we did it. And especially if they were a finalist in previous years, I think they really do appreciate the fact that these are excellence awards now, not just an award for being one amazing product. There are too many amazing products in the industry for there to just be one award given out in the year. So, I mean, I really welcome the new change to it, and I hope other people do too. And I certainly know that companies are really excited about it being different and having the non-edible and edible split. I know Leahy from Magicolors was especially happy with her Magicolors Bling Bling Dust, which is this awesomely sparkly edible, not glitter, it's almost like this fine sand type thing. It's really beautiful. I know she was really happy about that. And yeah, so I just, you know, it needs to be an industry awards, and companies are part of the industry. I personally feel like it's been changed for the better.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good transition. Like, we were talking about it at our table. It created a lot of buzz because people were like, well, why all? Why not just go to five? And I said, I think this is smoother because it almost felt like you took all of those companies like Marvelous Mold and stuff who've been on that list every... I mean, ag bags have been around forever. It's not like it's a new product, but yeah. So many people love their ag bay. I mean, God, I don't think you can ever get between some of the people in their ag bay. But so I'll tell you, at Austin for the raffles, the ag bay is where we make... So much money on the raffle. Like, people will put money in the Ag Bay raffle every year. So that's a hugely popular product. But I felt like what you did was you said, right, there's all these ones that have been recognized all this time. Let's give them their due. And then that feels like a really good transition to then moving to what you want to do next time with the five.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't just about, you know, they've been nominated in the past, we need to recognize them. They're still nominated in 2019. Yeah. The Ag Bay, Marvelous Molds, Karen Davies Molds. But if we did it the same way where we tested and scored, and it is the product with just one, the highest score that wins, Ag Bay is going to lose out. All these other products that are favorites are going to lose out. The fondants are going to lose out. So we did really feel like this year we wanted to really sort of make that change, mm-hmm. and then next year we will only award five.
Right.
So I personally did feel that maybe eight was a little bit too much, but I needed to do it.
No,
there was no way I could whittle it down any further. Those were the top that we felt that really needed to be recognized this year. And I'm really excited about next year already because people have already started sending messages about new products and development and things like that. So yeah, it's quite an exciting time.
Yeah, and we were also all joking because you did the non-edible first. I think it was non-edible. Whichever one was first, we were all looking at each other going, they're going to do this for the next one too, right?
Yeah.
This will be really weird and awkward if now they're like just one. And so I can't remember, there was someone new at our table who was like, no, they might not. And I'm like, oh, I'm pretty sure that's going to be super awkward if it's not all eight on this next
one. Yeah, because I think in my speech, I slowed my speech all the way down and I said something like, right, so this year we've decided to give two fondants. And I think
that's right.
All the companies at the front who have fondants were just, oh, God.
Yeah, that's right. There was a whole, oh.
There was a little bit of an ooh in the room.
Well, yeah, done.
I'd add some drama and build it up a little bit, but yeah, it was...
Yeah, because, well, even when you said that, I thought, she's joking. That's, oh, God. Can you imagine if you'd been serious?
Yeah, can you imagine? God, I think there would have been an uproar. About next year, and I've already heard from other people about new products that they're coming out with, new designs and new variations of stuff, so really excited actually about next year's product award winners already.
I'm super excited about next year already because I really need a new dress, and I've already been planning, should I try to make my own?
Oh, you should.
Because I'm hard to fit, and I've got, again, all these, I have so many health issues and skin issues, and it's a whole big thing for me. And so I thought, because the dress that I wore this year was an older dress when I pulled it out of the wardrobe when I was too sick to go shopping a few weeks ago. And I thought, oh, this is really nice. Why don't I wear it? And when I went to pack it on Thursday, I was like, oh, because it has a hole in it. Okay, so. Oh, my God, it has another hole in it. So. Oh, my God, there are six holes in it. I mean, they were just like, it's just an old rayon dress. So it was just like tiny little worn bits like no one would see. But I was like sewing it, and I was like, okay, that passed for this year. I need a new dress for next year. And so I was just asking my sewing friends, all right, in theory, if I map out every panel of this dress and learn to use the sewing machine a friend gave me 2 years ago, could I, in theory, replicate this dress, but like maybe buy some like nerdy fabric that's hidden, like, you know, black fabric, but it's got like, maybe there's some Star Trek or TARDIS logos hidden in it, because this would make me super happy.
I think Molly made her dress 1 year.
She did, yeah. Yeah.
I think it was 16. She made her dress. She basically just got a baked base dress and then like stuck stuff all over it. Helen Collier from Collie Wobble Cakes, who works on my stand pretty much every year. She's one of my cake showgirls. She made her dress 1 year, and I think she had like a corset, and then she did this really beautifully like flowy, netty skirt part just looked amazing. It looked really, really good. I think you should make your own dress.
You know, because given that I have a year.
Yeah, plenty of time.
I've had some good advice that I should get like a cheap bed sheet and map it out that and learn that way. And that way I can, when I try it on, if I realize, oh, this part didn't work, I just a cheap bed sheet. And then go to Spoonflower or something and buy my nerdy fabric. And I feel like it's going to work. Like, I think, again, this is what I love about the CMAs. It's black tie. I get that. But I feel like you guys, because you know that it is a creative audience, there was a dude with mirrors.
I know.
Like, it was so cool. Like, the outfits.
I got a picture with him.
The outfits are our community there. I mean, yes, there's black tie, but there's also, there's creativity. And I don't feel like you guys would ever say, oh, no, that like that's too weird. I could tell you embrace it and it feels good.
Yeah, definitely. I love the dresses that people wear. Some of them are so beautiful, like really, really beautiful.
It is my favorite party of the year. And I love you for putting it on because I really, truly appreciate it, that it is a massive ton of work.
Yeah, it is. But it's also worth it at the end, you know, seeing all of the people who come on the night and you know, the winners, and I know it's super disappointing for people who don't win. I mean, in categories, we extended the number of finalists in some of the categories. So you even had sometimes six people in a category instead of the four. So there's going to be one person who wins and then five people who are disappointed. And I know it's hard, but I hope they know that being a finalist is such a big deal. You know, there are so many amazing artists out there, and to just pick you as a finalist, it is super hard work, and it is hard to pick the final five or the final six even. And, you know, I love the whole thing that is the awards, about awarding and recognizing and celebrating talent. That's really what it's about. And I think it was Milka who is the coordinator for the American Cake Horror Cake Show that did a really lovely post.
Yes, and I saw that.
She basically shared the winning collaboration image, which was Italian Sugar Dream. And she actually shared that image and then wrote this lovely status about, yes, she was disappointed that she didn't win, but she wasn't actually going to take that away from the winner. Mm-hmm. And that she celebrated the winner on the night. And it was just a lovely way of, and such a gracious way of sort of saying that, I didn't win, but I'm so happy for the winner and congratulations to the winner. And I thought that was a really lovely thing for her to say and do. Because I know it can be disappointing. I mean, nobody likes losing, but, you know, it is such a creative industry and it's so lovely when you see that kind of support.
Yeah, I saw that post and I was, same thing when you enter, if, you know, I've only ever got a bronze, and part of me is like, I've only ever got a bronze, but like, you know what, I've had like a bunch of bronzes at CI, yay me, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's the mature way to look at it.
People only get merits or not even that. So I think people should, you know, put themselves out there and try it.
Well, I mean, that's the evidence. That's where the blog name comes from. Was you should try playing around with edible art, and the worst case scenario is you have a cake, eat it. No one needs to know. So, it's been great having you on, and like I really am. I'm not just gushing because you're on here. I love your magazine. It's currently the only magazine I'm subscribing to because I had to scale back. I'm not saying other magazines aren't good too. Just I was not having time to read a bunch, and so yours is the one I kept because I get the most out of it. And
thank you.
I appreciate all, like, you do so much for our industry, and genuinely, I appreciate you.
Oh, thank you. That's so lovely to hear. That's really lovely to know. I mean, I think the community is such a great place, and I love the creativity that flows through the veins of all these people. And I know it can be an emotional place, but the magazine was built from a community on Facebook, and it was built by people sharing stuff. And the magazine is what I quit my job for. And the awards is, yes, it is stressful. Yes, it is massively administrative. And, you know, business is hard at this time of the year with Brexit and political climate and all the rest of it. But it still came together and it was a wonderful event. And yeah, I just, you know, I'm happy that people enjoy themselves and people feel part of something. It brings me great pleasure.
All right. So let us know what you've got coming up next year.
So earlier this year, we helped organize the Indian Cake Awards. So this wasn't really a Cake Masters thing. It was using our expertise as an event organizer for awards to do a country-specific awards. So we trialed it, and we tried to just do the Indian Cake Awards, which were abbreviated down to the ICAs. And it was really positive, and it went really well. It was almost like a mini version of what Cake Masters magazine do every November. So we are really excited to be doing the ACAs in Miami next year, which will be the American Cake Awards. We're in very early stages of planning it all, but the venue has been found, everything's been signed for, and it's really, really exciting. I think as an event organizer, I'm really excited to be involved with this, and I absolutely cannot wait to have a country-specific award for America, because I feel there is so much talent out there. It would be lovely to just have something for creators in America. It worked really well for the Indian Awards, where we only awarded to people based in India. I think it's something that will be super exciting and super special, and really exciting to work with lots of different companies and lots of different artists on this one too. So watch this space.
Okay, so hang on, that would be involved with SoFlo then?
It's not involved with SoFlo, but it would be that SoFlo weekend.
Okay, so sort of like you're not part of CI, but we all associate it.
Well, yeah, our awards for this year, it's done at the CI weekend, so people tend to go to the CI during the day, and then our party is in the evening. So what we've decided to do is actually have this award on the Friday before SoFlo starts, or the SoFlo weekend. So it'll be the Friday evening. And it's just really exciting to start something fresh and new. Yeah.
That sounds super exciting. So when will you be putting out the information for that then?
So that will be in early December that we'll be putting the information out for that.
Okay. That is super exciting. And I'm sure the people who are going, I know a lot of people who are going to be really into that.
Yeah, I feel like, we trialed it in India, and I thought, is it going to be good just having just a country-focused awards? And I think people really liked it, and we were able to tailor the categories to be, suitable for the Indian market. It's a very, an emerging market, so you don't have many people who are great at, say, sculpted cakes. But then we had 32 finalists in the Rising Star category, and we divided out by North, South, East, and West. And that really reflected the Indian market, that there is a growing number of people doing cake decorating, and not the level that you have, say, at the Cake Masters Awards, where you already have a lot of people at a very high standard. And I think people were able to engage and be part of it and enjoy it and be there to sort of really be proud as a creator in India. I'm glad that it went well. And I'm glad to be, and excited to be doing something like this in America next year.
That is very cool. And I'm pretty sure you will have to clone yourself soon.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm just thinking of the workload on that. It's like, when I told someone that I was going to be talking to you today, like this soon after, this past weekend, one of my friends said, I don't think she sleeps. You just have so much energy. It's amazing.
I do love it. I never sort of really ever switch off. I'm constantly looking at stuff on my phone. I'm constantly thinking about it. But I think it's just the industry is just so creative. I never really am not thinking about cake or designs or artists and what they're doing. So I'm just so immersed in it. And I love it being this way.
All from one cupcake class.
I know. Can you imagine?
I know. Like, that blows my mind. That blows my mind. You should enter an entry in all your free time.
Yeah, maybe in the free time.
And then you could feature it in your magazine.
Yeah, I might.
I had a bronze featured in your magazine. It felt so legit.
Yeah, I remember putting you. We need to do one of those features again, where we actually have competition winners giving us, the lowdown on what they got and how they feel. I really love doing those kind of features where you've actually got the person's or the cake artist's story behind.
Mm-hmm. And I like that it wasn't just a bunch of golds, because that's kind of obvious.
Why would you just have golds? You want someone who's, entered the previous year, got a bronze, and now got a silver.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, it made my day.
And we even did somebody who got a gold in previous years and then got a bronze. And in their interview, they said, I'm disappointed, but I learned where I went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And to somebody else competing, I think those words are really powerful. to know that you won't maybe not always be at a gold standard. And I think this particular person went from a sculpted category, say, to decorative exhibit, and that's not something that they were used to. But they put themselves out there and they tried. Mm-hmm. And it was really nice that they took it in such a way that, oh, it doesn't mean I'm bad.
No.
But it just meant that I know where I was going wrong and I was doing the wrong things. I didn't read the rules properly, so I'll know what to do next time.
Yeah.
So, I think it's almost a bit of like a self-help thing for competitors to know how competitors feel and what they need to do next time. And I think even one of the questions in the feature was like, oh, what feedback did you get from the judges?
Yeah.
And I think that's always a learning point when you are competing. Learn and listen to what the judges are saying.
Oh, absolutely. So, yeah. Yeah. I mean, frequently when I've gone wrong, I'm the one telling the judge, yeah, I know, I did that, I did that. And I once had a judge say, you can stop telling me what you got wrong. I was like, yeah, no, but I mean, because often you know, and sometimes you don't. Early on when someone told me about tool marks, I mean, I knew mine didn't look as clean as someone else, but it hadn't occurred to me it was because I hadn't wiped the scissors every time.
Right, right.
So just yes. the judge saying, you know, wipe your scissors between every, it was like the Christmas tree sort of cut thing, right?
Or was it the Christmas tree that had fallen over?
Yeah, yeah. That, I mean, like,
yeah, don't. I remember that.
Yeah, that was, yeah. And because I was so sick. That was the year Mike was there. And no card had been put out, so I thought I got nothing. And then I lined up for the judges, and I was so upset, and I was so sick. And even when I came and complained to Mike and said I didn't get anything, he said, what, for that Christmas one? Oh, you got robbed. You should get at least something for that. And then I lined up for the judging, and a very kind judge took me over, and she said, oh, so you got a bronze? And I said, no, I got nothing. And she said, no, you got a bronze. Oh, honey, your card is missing. Let's get you a card. I hugged her. And I'm like, uh-huh. I don't know that you're supposed to hug judges, but I hugged a judge because I was so happy to get a bronze after thinking I was getting nothing. But yeah, it was when she talked to me about snipping. I can't believe you remember that entry. That, man, you must have a computer brain.
I always associate cakes with people. So there are certain people that I will remember a particular cake for that particular artist. So, or there's that first cake that I saw of theirs, I thought, wow, that's what I remember from them. So like for Liz Marrick, it was the one that she entered into that threadless competition. It was like the hooded person it was like pale blue and very icy. Mm-hmm. For Heather Sherman, it was one of her unicorns.
I was going to say, it's the unicorn, really, yeah.
Like out there. So yeah, there are certain pieces that I just associate with them. And when I get to obviously know them more, I just know their style. I can tend to tell who might have created a cake just from the way that it's presented or the styling or even the photos sometimes. I can tell from backdrops. Yeah, life.
Who has which backdrop?
I see a lot of cake and certain ones sort of stick in my mind. So, yeah.
That was me walking around when I finally looked at entries on Sunday. I was looking at that going, oh, look at those fine work mandala cupcakes. Bet that's Michelle Becker. And then the next one, oh, look at that beautiful runout. I bet that's Michelle Becker. And then I got to another one that was like the beautiful, like almost like a fractally paisley thing she did. And I was like, is this Michelle Becker? Yeah, that's Michelle Becker. And then I saw this adorable little plaque of a blue door. And I'm like, oh, I love this. Who is this? It's still Michelle Becker. So I think I know who I'm going to nominate for Royal Icing for next year.
Yeah.
Pretty sure.
She does some amazing work. She really does.
Yes, because you start to get a feel for that. That looks like that person's cake. Mm. That looks like that person's amazing style. So.
Yeah.
Yes. But anyway, I should probably wrap this up.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate having these 2 hours to speak to you. That's been a lot of fun.
Thank you. I'm like so, I'm not even trying to sound like I'm sucking up to you because I am literally in awe that you wanted to come on my show. I've been bragging for months. So.
Oh no, after I heard the podcast, I thought, gosh, why have I not been on this show sooner?
Because I would have not had the guts to ask you, honestly. So you've inspired me to to be bolder, because I used to be so meek and Canadian about it. Like, oh, you come on my show? So now I'm just like, yeah, come on my show.
Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. Have a good afternoon.
And you.
Bye. Bye. So, as Rosie said, if you want to be in Cake Masters magazine, go contact them and ask to be in the magazine. Same thing if you want to be on this podcast. I mean, yeah, I do ask friends that I know are likely to say yes and come on, But in Rosie's case, she heard last year's CI episode and asked how she could come on. I never in a million years thought someone who was that big in our industry, who I didn't already know really well, would want to come on. So, as you heard at the end there, I hadn't asked her because I was foolishly too shy about it. But anyone in the sugar arts industry is welcome on this show, and you're welcome in Cake Masters magazine too. So if I haven't asked you and you wish I would, please, please don't wait for me to ask, but just tell me that you want to be on. I've posted my 2020 air dates at eat-the-evidence.com/podcast, and most dates are still open. So if you want to come on this show, simply go pick an open date and contact me using any of the methods listed on that page, or Facebook Messenger is always easy, and I'll get you on the list and set up. It is super easy and relaxed, I promise. You can come on for a whole episode, or just pop in for a short soundbite. I'm open to all contributions, and I definitely want to hear all of your voices on here.
This has been the Eat the Evidence podcast. A warm thanks to all of my contributors, and you can find out more about them and the things discussed on today's episode in the show notes by visiting the podcast section of the Eat the Evidence website. eat-the-evidence.com/podcast. There, you'll find social media links as well as links to iTunes, Stitcher, and other places where you can subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. I've also posted detailed instructions on how to leave me a Facebook voicemail message and other options to call into the show. Please do feel free at any time to call in your very own cake formation, funny story, talk about a challenge you're having or have recently overcome, or rant about something driving you crazy. And if you like the show, please post a review on iTunes and share it with all of your sugar artist friends. This show was produced and edited by me, Kimberly Chapman. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, you are an amazing artist, and everyone involved with this podcast supports you. You can do it! Until next time, bye-bye, and good luck with whatever you're working on.
Just got to be in it to win it.